Here is one of a series of talks by spiritual leader Lola McDowell Lee, spanning two decades from the early 70s through the 90s. Lola was a Zen Roshi whose Rinzai lineage included Dr. Henry Plutov and renowned Zen master Shigetsu Sasaki. Lola was a religious scholar as well as an ordained Christian minister. While the talks are focused mainly on Zen and Buddhism, Lola drew on many spiritual traditions, including those of Jesus, Plato, Lao Tzu, the Hindu Vedas, Meister Eckhart, and Gurdjieff.
How's Michael doing?
Very well. His body is kind of excellent. He's doing very well.
Oh, great. If anybody is still so inclined, they used for this little boy, he's 4 1/2, was hit by a truck. And they've had to take out one kidney and 18 inches of his intestines. But they used 44 pints of blood, which somewhere along the line need to be replaced. If anybody feels like donating some blood, fine. Okay? After Bankai Zenji passed away, a blind man who lived near the Master's temple said to a friend, "Since I am blind, I cannot watch a person's face. So I must judge his character by the sound of his voice. Ordinarily, when I hear someone congratulate another upon his happiness or success, I also hear a secret tone of envy. When condolence is expressed for the misfortune of another, I hear pleasure and satisfaction as if the one condoling was really glad there was something left to gain in his own world. In all my experience, however, Bankai's voice was always sincere. Whenever he expressed happiness, I heard nothing but happiness. And whenever he expressed sorrow, sorrow was all I heard." Now, it has been said of us, all human beings, that we're all a little bit schizo, that schizophrenia is a normal condition, huh? To some extent. First of all, when we're born, we enter a world into which, for the first time, we have to do something for ourselves. We have to breathe. We're held in someone's arms, and somehow we are aware that there is all this space around us. And so now we don't know where we're at. All of a sudden, we're no longer safe. Yeah. It's a very basic fear. But now the syndrome, pain, pleasure begins. We begin to look for pleasure and we try to run away from pain. And this is a duality in us. It's a kind of a split in us. You know? And then as we grow up, well, anyway, the body changes and the emotions come more to the foreground. They develop, huh? And the mind begins to accumulate all kinds of things, you know, and we are suddenly faced with centuries of conditioning in our society, huh? And we find that we live in a very contradictory world. One part of us wants to go one way, another part of us wants to go another way, and then we have this tremendous struggle, you know, with yay and nay. This I should do and that I should not do. and the yes and the no of the world, and the yes and the no of me. Yeah. So in all of this pushing and pulling in all these directions, you know, somewhere deep down, hidden, there is a unity. Our conditionings, the contradictions are all on the periphery. They're, you know, but this very center of us, this core of us, remains absolutely untouched. There is something in us that is aware of all the outer things and aware of all our inner states. But it itself remains just aware. This tremendous perception that we have. And with all of the things, you know, that we think and we say and we do and we feel emotionally, sometimes we give ourselves a pat on the back, and sometimes we shrivel up a little bit inside and wish that this situation had never been. But all the while, in all of this, this living force is never touched by any of it. Now, one of our efforts, you know, is to drop this split in us, to drop this divided mind, you know, and our divided emotions. How to become an undivided, integrated, centered individual, you know, with feet on the ground. Now, you know, there's many voices in us, all kinds of voices. Some are sweet and gentle and some are harsh, you know. If we say yes to something, immediately there's this no that goes along with it. How often do you say yes, totally, with no contradictions? Well, yes, I would like to do that, but. How often do you really say yes? And it isn't that you're really fighting with the world. You know, you're fighting with yourself. You know. And we have this now contradiction. We find it in ourselves. This duality. And in the midst of that duality, how can there be peace? How to find a really true, deep silence with all these voices? Do we look and see that the in is like the out and the out is like the in? There's an old adage in the esoteric tradition, you know, that it says, as above, so below. And so, as within, so without. You know, in St. Thomas, Jesus says to the effect that when you make the above as the below, and the in as the out, and the outer as the inner, and when you have a foot in place of a foot, and a hand in place of a hand, and an eye in place of an eye, and an image in place of an image, then you shall enter the kingdom. Before we endow, and we do, we give. I mean, you look at a person and you say he is good. Well, where was that goodness first? It was in you, and then you put it on him or her. Or that girl is pretty. Where's the pretty first? The pretty first is in you. Then you put it on the person. You project it. Something pleased you about the person. You liked the person. Something didn't please you about the person. You didn't like the person. But first of all, it was all with you. See? So without is the within. And then, as Rilke says in his little poem, du hast die Welt gemacht. You made your world. All the time you make your world. Yeah. Now, in all this struggle with our duality, this state, trying to reach an understanding of non-duality, what it is to not have any of this duality, non-duality, we sometimes forget that the periphery, what's out here, you know, can't win. Only what is at the very center, that very still, quiet center, that wins. That is the abiding. The periphery comes and goes. We call it impermanence. It is constant change. How long do you stay in a mood? Well, at the most for a week. And if you stay in a mood for a week and you're with anger with somebody, I feel sorry for you. Yeah. If you're feeling at peace with yourself, have it last a month. But at the same time, you know, how long does it usually last? Not too long, And then right away there comes something else, and then there comes something else, and then there comes something else, and then there comes something else, See? And our attention is focused on this coming and going, but is on the periphery. You know, this constant change, and we sit here and wonder, you know, why is it changing? Why is it changing? We go round and round and round with it. And we're never still inside with ourselves. And this, what's on the periphery that we are following all the time, you know, it delays, it postpones, it wastes our time and energy. You know. And if you just are living only on the periphery, you know, it's sort of like you're living a life of pretense. You know, all these masks, you know, all these faces, one after the happy face, the sad face, you know, the bewildered face, and that's mostly what it is. But what about your original face? Your original face, which is the great Zen koan, your original face. Not the many out here that you project, but the original. There was a man by the name of Abrahamson who had reached a grand old age of 80, and he decided to celebrate. I tell these little jokes for John. This man, all his life, had been Orthodox. And he wore a long beard and a black hat and a black suit and a black overcoat. Now his 80th birthday, how to celebrate? How to celebrate this tremendous event? Well, he shaved off his beard first, and then he replaced these somber clothes with the latest style. So he had a green check suit, and he had a burgundy tie, and a blue striped shirt, buttoned down. Yeah? And then he headed out the door. Yeah? And as he crossed the street, you know, he was quite jubilant. He was very excited. It was a big birthday. He wasn't paying any attention, and he was hit by a truck, and he was killed. So there he gets to heaven, and he speaks to God. Yeah. And he says, my 80th birthday, why me? Couldn't you have waited a little while? Why me? I've always been a good husband. I gave to all the charities. I have always been a religious man. Couldn't you let me celebrate my birthday? To tell the truth, said God, I didn't recognize you. You think God recognizes you? You know, like the little story we talked about last week when that elderly priest said, Yes, he's very fond of me. Hmm? Yeah. This 80-year-old man changed his clothes once. Hmm? From somber to gay. We change every minute. You know, we change our masks. Now, for the moment, forget about God recognizing you. Hmm? Can you recognize yourself? Do you recognize yourself, who you are? Hmm? Can you say who you are? Can you show who you are? Hmm? This koan, you know, before your mother and father were, what was your original face? The face you had before you were born, and the face you will have after you die. What is your original face? Out of all of the other faces that you have had and have now, can you say which one is yours? Which balloon? Hmm? You know, have you ever observed that, let us say a man is sitting in his office, or in a restaurant, or wherever, hmm? And the secretary passes by, or the cleaning woman passes by, or the boss passes by, or if he's in a restaurant, the busboy goes by, or the maitre d' goes by, or a waitress goes by. Just watch how many faces you have. See, the cleaning woman, you hardly notice. It just belongs with the establishment. Hmm? But if the boss comes into the room, immediately you stand up wagging your tail, you know, and all smiles. Hmm? If a secretary comes in, well, if she's pretty, you have a different face, don't you, than for the boss or for the cleaning woman. And if your wife comes in, you have still another kind of a face. Adjusting, all the time adjusting, all the time with a mask, adjusting. And it's the same way with women. The janitor goes by, very different than the boss going by. The busboy going by is very different than the maitre d' going by. Hmm? You know, we should watch ourselves in these little things. Yeah? Oh, you know, our attitude towards others. Just look a little. And then you can say, oh yeah, and then drop it. Don't follow it, drop it. Yeah. So that we can forget these adjustments, these attitudes. You've looked at them, huh? Forget about them in the business of looking for the original face. Hmm? The Buddha said of one who had seen his original face, you know, like Mahakashapa, you know, he said, there is a unity within them. There is like a taste of an enlightened person. It's like the taste of seawater. Wherever you taste it, out of whatever sea, whatever ocean, wherever, it always tastes of salt. It is always the same. Yeah. Now, every day, a little bit of practice. Every day, a little bit of practice, huh? So we can mature. So we can find this unity. There is a hitch in this thing. Hmm? Real faces grow. Real flowers grow. Real trees grow. You can deceive yourself. And you can deceive a lot of people with plastic flowers and plastic trees and plastic masks, but they don't grow. You take them off and put them on, and take them off and put them on. Life grows. So we learn not to deceive ourselves. This is the most important. Do not deceive yourself with your own attitudes. You know, it's like the old Zen master. Every morning he would get up, you know, and he would say, "Master," and then he would answer, "Yes, yes." "Master, yes, yes." Do not deceive yourself. That's most important. Do not deceive yourself. And you can grow. We talk every once in a while about a monk. And he is... He's like the idiot, you know. We dump so much on him, so we don't have to say, "Well, it's in here." We put it on him, our little monk, you know. And one day he had been pulled from the river, and the police decided that he had tried to commit suicide. And when they questioned him, he admitted, yes, he had tried to kill himself. And his story went like this. "Yes, I tried to kill myself. The world is against me, and I wanted to end it all. I was determined not to do a halfway job. See? So I bought a piece of rope, I bought some matches, I got some kerosene, and I bought a gun." See? "And just in case none of these worked, I went down to the river. See? I threw the rope over the limb of a tree that was hanging out over the water, and I tied the rope around my neck, and I poured kerosene all over my body, and I lit the match. I jumped off the bank and put the gun to my head and pulled the trigger. And guess what happened? I missed. The bullet hit the rope before I could hang myself, so I fell to the river, and the water put out the fire before I could burn. And you know, if I hadn't been a good swimmer, I might have drowned." That's how things go. It's a very sad state of affairs. Yeah. When we eat, we're not even present. We're thinking about eating. You're not there with the eating. We think about the food. We're not total in this act of eating. We're divided. The thinking is here and the eating is here. And we go right on pretending that everything's okay. So we don't have to face any problem of myself. Only the problems that you give me. But appearances are deceptive. Appearances, amongst other things, give us a great deal of respectability. But does your appearance give you contentment? Does it give you peace? Someday, one way or another, someday, truth has a way of surfacing about yourself, about your situation, about your attitudes. Truth reveals itself. You don't think it. It reveals itself. It comes up as, you know, rises from below, and there it is. And it's with little truths. And so it is with the truth. Truth is always that which reveals itself. And all of a sudden, oh, that's the way it is. So we sit for meditation facing ourselves. Let the truth rise. And let it reveal itself. Then you can live a life of authenticity. Then the voice is a voice of unity. And the body is like an orchestra, huh? It's all tuned up and moving. You know? But usually the mouth says something, the body says something else, the eyes say again something else, and all of these opposites simultaneously. No wonder we're neurotic. We're puzzled, and we're forlorn, and we're feeling lost. Where are we? Now, we have all had moments of being total, of being whole, where everything seems to fall together for a moment. It's rare, but we've had them. You know, sometimes when you're down watching the ocean, and maybe on a morning when there's this tremendous wildness in it, you know, and suddenly you forget yourself. Or you're in the mountains in the snow, you know, and suddenly there's no one to be false to. Or I remember one night I was riding in an airplane, and here was just this sky with the moon in it. And it was almost as if there was nothing else. You fall together in that moment. There's a peace, you know, because there is this wholeness. And it rises, and all of a sudden, it's like you're very satisfied. You're fulfilled because you are just one. So, and now comes along a teaching that says you don't have to wait for these moments. Rare. You don't have to run around the world looking for spaces and times to fall together. This kind of a thing can be a natural life. And that's the effort of Zen. Living this moment. Living a very extraordinary life in a very ordinary life. You're cutting weeds, chopping wood, working in the garden, carrying water, cleaning the floor, painting, hammering nails, cooking food, washing clothes, washing dishes. You can be at ease with yourself. It's a question of you being in your action. It's like birds building a nest. You know, they're in their action. They're chirping and they're singing and building. They make a mistake, they don't correct it. They start all over again. They can't correct. They have to start all over again. You know, too bad, huh? But the cats, you know, they watch a movement in the grass, you know, and such delight they have in the fluttering of a leaf. Yeah. Dog chases its tail, you know. They're free. You don't have a mask on at that moment, you know. Old Chuang Tzu, you know, long time ago, amongst the many stories that he told, he tells one about a man by the name of Xu Yen, and he's sitting by the riverbank, just sitting there fishing, perfectly at ease. And he was sought by the emperor to come and be prime minister because he had a reputation of being a very wise man. So a group of ambassadors went out to get him, and they were followed by this golden chariot with all these presents to give to him. And these ambassadors are very puzzled when they find this wise man just sitting on the bank of a little river fishing. Just ordinary. They look at this little man, and he's so special, he's going to be prime minister. But they had to follow orders, so they said to him, the emperor wants you to come to court and be prime minister, and we have come to escort you. And this Xu Yen, he looks at him, and he looks around him, And there was a little turtle wagging its tail and burrowing in the mud, enjoying a very small pool that was created by the river. And so he said to them, well, look at the turtle. And he turns his back on him and fishes. He goes on with his fishing. And the ambassadors look at each other, and finally they say to him, what do you mean? We don't understand. What about the turtle? And Xu Yan says, well, I have heard that there is a turtle in the emperor's palace. It's 3,000 years old. It's dead, of course. Yeah. It's encased with gold. Valuable diamonds and rubies, all set. Very precious. You know. And this dead turtle is worshipped for its value. Now, if you ask this alive turtle, would you like to be the dead turtle in the king's palace? You will be encased in gold. You will be surrounded by precious stones. You will be worshipped by the king himself. What do you think this little turtle would choose? Would he like to go to the palace, or would he like to wag his tail in the mud? Well, of course, said the ambassadors, he would like to wag his tail in the mud. Everybody knows that. So Xu Yan looked at them. He says, do you think I am more foolish than the turtle? Yeah. In our everyday world, you know, we're pushed around. People push us around. We're pushed this way and we're pushed that way. Let them push. Just be yourself. Quietly, grounded when you walk, alert as you eat, let them push. If you sit there and you are at peace and one with yourself, the push just goes right on through, and then they've got it back again. It's a little difficult, I grant you, to find out who we are, because we have so much confusion. See? All the things that we've been told. Our parents may no longer be around, and our grade school teachers are no longer around, or at least they don't have any part in our daily lives now. But what they have told us goes right on speaking in subtle whisperings inside. We call it our conscience. And the parents are blamed for giving us a conscience, and this isn't true. We are born with a kind of knowing about this is right and this is wrong. We don't know it's right or wrong at, you know, by the time we're two, but there is something in us that knows, just the same way a bird knows how to sing without being taught. You know, or a fish knows how to swim. You don't have to teach a fish to swim. In the same way, we have a kind of a built-in morality. And it is upon this, of course, that the parents ply themselves. You know, this you can do and that you can't do. And then the child goes out in society, and that has got even a bigger voice than the parents. And it is here they either become integrated in society or they become asocial. But we have a conscience of a sort, all of us, some more than others. And sometimes it stands us in good stead and sometimes not. Sometimes we listen to it and do the wrong thing. If we do something against it, it condemns us. We ourselves. If we do according to its will, it applauds us, it appreciates us, and we like to be appreciated, huh? Sure. So in this manner, because we have brought all of this along until now, however now is, but from 2 years old, through now. We have brought it all along. In this manner, we are dominated by the dead, because all of that is dead. Those are plastic flowers back there. And Jesus said, you know, let the dead bury the dead. God is a living God for the living. And where is living? Living is right now. Right now. You know, you're never ever going to drop all of it. But look at it so that it doesn't govern you without your knowing it. See, then at least you can make your own choice. Whether you want to be now or whether you want to be three. You know, it's, you know, sometimes you would think to me you'd get a little tired of it, huh? Well, you do. But you kind of like Jones. He owed $100 to a man named Smith. And the debt was past due, so Jones, being broke, borrowed the money from Spencer. And a week later, he borrowed the $100 back from Smith to pay Spencer. And another week went by, and Jones borrowed back the $100 from Spencer to pay back Smith. And this went on and on and on and on and on for weeks. And finally, he got them together, and he said, now look, fellas, this is a lot of bother. Why don't you just exchange the $100 every week and keep me out of it? You know. See? Now, all of this past that has put things in our minds, you know, and it's like our parents, you know. Now I have trained you, and you're 18 or you're 21 or whatever, you know. Now you're on your own. You're an adult. You keep us out. Yeah. But there's this conscience in us. There's this something in us, you know. And so still, all of these subtle whisperings going on. There is a saying of Jesus that some people find very difficult. He says, whoever does not hate his father and mother in my way will not be able to be a disciple to me. Now, what he is saying is, you know, look inside and drop what is not yours. See? Because he follows that statement immediately with, and whoever does not love his father and mother in my way, his way, will not be able to be a disciple to me. He says, you know, honor thy father and mother. But drop what's in you so that you can be you. Honor thy father and mother. Without them, you wouldn't be here. You know? You wouldn't have this opportunity to know yourself. You know? But you don't have to carry them like a burden all your life. All your friends, all the people you've ever met, all the people you've emulated, all the things you've seen on TV, everything that was taught you as a little child. You know, let's dump it. After all, you know, are you still that little child? Well, sometimes I say yes. The parental voice in us must be recognized, or else we are dominated by it without our knowing it. So know it. When you do this, very often I open a refrigerator. It's just like my mother was doing it. I see her doing it. There's nothing wrong with it that I do it the same way she does. I recognize it. The past is all dead. Why cling to it? You know, God is a living God, and he's for the living. You know, we came into this world, and we had to breathe for ourselves. Take your own growth in your hands, and do for yourself in this process. You're not here to fulfill another's expectations. You are here to attain your own destiny. That's your birthright. Who are you? Now this Bankai Zenji, you know, we usually say Roshi, you know, which is a title for a teacher, and it's a title of respect. But Zenji is a little bit more, and they called Bankai Zenji. And he had a long time ago, you know, centuries ago, he struggled and he struggled and he struggled, and he kept missing, and he kept missing, and he kept missing. See? Then one day, he heard someone recite the sutras. And one word, because he was just listening, he didn't have a lot of phrases going around in his head. He was just listening. And all of a sudden, the word unborn caught him like a hook. Unborn. And in that moment, he had a great sudden realization. We're born, we come into this world, we die. There is something unborn that comes with us and doesn't die when we leave. It is unborn, therefore it cannot die. Unborn hooked him. So we listen. And this blind man, he lived near the temple, and he couldn't see people's faces. So he became very perceptive in his hearing. You know, our eyes are much more selective than our ears. If you're listening to me now, if you're listening, you are also listening to the cars going by on the road. You are listening to the birds. You're listening to the children outside. You're listening if there's any breeze in the trees. You're listening to the dogs. All of that, simultaneous, you're hearing. And then, of course, you select what is important to you. But that's after. To the ears, existence is simultaneous. There's a togetherness in existence. You know, there are methods of meditation in which one simply sits and listens. You know, you kind of listen, waiting, listening. It's tremendous alertness it takes. It's easy to close the eyes. It's easy to look at the green tree and pick out the colors and selective with that, you know. And with eyes, you can open them, you can close them. You know? The mind manipulates the eyes. But your ears, you can't close. No, you must accept what comes to you. So let it be simultaneous existence. And so with this blind person, you know, he begins seeing with his ears. And you can, you know. The subtle nuances with the ears that the eyes overlook. See? A sound, a tone, a little wavering, fluctuations, you know. Your footsteps. You know. Are you rooted? Are you grounded in existence? Every person moves differently. Every person walks differently. You know, a man like the Buddha, when he walked, he was grounded. You know, his legs are almost like the roots of a tree. This is the trunk of the tree. This is the trunk and his roots, you know. And he walked like that because he was nourished by the earth. You know? He even said it, you know. They wanted to know who was his witness when he attained enlightenment. And he says, this very earth. Ordinarily, we see people once in a while that are like uprooted trees. They walk around very gingerly, you know, as if they didn't even belong here. And a thief walks very differently because he's got fear in his footsteps. There is the sound of it in the way he walks. A person walking around their own home is at home and he's at ease and he walks differently than he walks when he's walking with the boss. So said this blind man, in all my experience, however, Bankai's voice was always sincere. Whenever he expressed happiness, I heard nothing but happiness. And whenever he expressed sorrow, sorrow was all I ever heard. See, this simplicity, you know, this is this trueness, you know, this is Zen. Most of you are familiar with Eliot, and I'm sure you've read this little thing. I'm going to quote something from him. He says, a condition of complete simplicity, costing not less than everything, and all shall be well, and all manner of things shall be well, when tongues of flame are enfolded into the crowned knot of fire, and the fire and the rose are one. Fire, very often, you know, is used as a symbol for spirit. And rose, we could say, well, is a symbol also for love. So, now, the energy that we have invested in our false faces, you know, in jealousy and hatred, in our greediness and our selfishness, you know, when that's released, and there is the energy of love and it's released, they're no longer polar opposites, that they're one. The fire and the rose are one. And then a man is simply simple. There's no contradiction in him. And what he does totally. See? He looks at you and he's there in the look. He touches you and it's not only his hand that's touching. There's something more. So you listen with your heart. A condition of complete simplicity, costing not less than everything. Yeah. You know, at first it seems to cost everything to be simple. But by and by, as our illusions drop, as our attitudes drop, how easy to be at ease with yourself. How relaxed, you know, to be a simple heart, to walk just hand in hand with life. Zen, you know, is the way, is a path of the individual. And it isn't a religion in the sense of Christianity, in the way fact that it's an organization. It's individual. To be a real Zenist is to be individual. It's to be one, not divided, cannot be divided any further. As long as we're split, we're not yet individual. We're not one. So it has been thusly named, this process of from wherever you are now, wherever you are now, to what you truly are, is called the individuation process. And as somebody once said, great is the stake. Difficult the task. But what could be more tremendous in your life or in anyone's life than to meet your own destiny? Now may the peace and the power that passeth all understanding hold us and keep us in the love of the Christed consciousness while we are seemingly separate one from another. And I thank you very much for coming.
If you find Lola's talks valuable, more will be posted in weeks to come.